Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Teachers have declared a strike alert after pay talks broke down. Prime Minister Babiš says the focus at a UN climate summit was on rhetoric, not actions. And the Social Democrats won't back a vote on taking the president to the Constitutional Court. Teaching trade unions in the Czech Republic have announced a strike alert. The move came after representatives failed to reach agreement on pay increases with the Minister of Education, Robert Plaga, on Tuesday. The head of the teachers' unions, František Dobšík, said the amount the minister was offering was unacceptable. Mr. Plaga proposed a rise of 2,250 crowns a month for all teachers and an average of around 1,400 crowns a month in bonuses. The teachers had been demanding a 15% pay rise. They later revised that figure to 10%, but insist that it should all appear in their members' basic pay. Despite increases in recent years, teachers' pay in the Czech Republic remains low in comparison to that in other professions, according to a new study produced by the Prague-based Institute for Democracy and Economic Analysis. The report found that educators' salaries in this country are among the lowest in all developed countries. The author said this was due to the fact that the Czech Republic spends around a third less of its GDP on education than is common in developed states. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has criticized the focus on words rather than deeds at the UN Climate Action Summit in New York, at which he represented the Czech Republic. Mr. Babiš said the Czech Republic wouldn't get its voice heard at the conference, despite the fact that it was adhering to the 2015 Paris Agreement targets. He said many countries had failed in that regard, but were still unveiling ambitious plans for the future. In a vote scheduled for Thursday, the Social Democrats will not support taking President Miloš Zeman to the Constitutional Court for gross violation of the Constitution, Novinky.cz reported on Tuesday. Representatives of the junior party and the governing coalition announced their intentions after a deputies group meeting. The bill, which has already been approved by the Senate, would need the votes of three-fifths of the country's 200 MPs to be passed. This is seen as very unlikely. The senators behind the move initially accused the president and his staff of seeking to influence the judiciary. Seven other charges of violating the Constitution have also been levelled against him. Czech Post is not planning to shut any branches in villages, the Minister of the Interior, Jan Hamáček, said on Tuesday, after a meeting with the chairman of the Union of Towns and Municipalities, František Lukl. The postal system falls under the Ministry of the Interior. Mr. Hamáček said in a statement that Czech Post should go into profit within 3 years, thanks to a planned restructuring. Mr. Lukl said the mayors of small urban centres had been disquieted by Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, who said Czech Post was dead and should be transformed into a private company. This gave rise to fears of branch closures. The weather forecast, it should be mainly overcast with some rain in the Czech Republic on Wednesday, with temperatures of up to 18 degrees Celsius. More rain and daytime highs in the high teens Celsius are also forecast for the following week. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the foreign service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, a Czech innovator has received the Outstanding Young Person Award. We take a look into the life of Aleš Jeník, a member of the country's emerging cosmopolitan class, recently identified by a Czech Radio survey. And later, we ask the question whether UNESCO status is truly beneficial for Czech historical sites. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Pavel Podruh, the founder of the Czech startup Self-Sufficient Houses, has become the first Czech ever to receive the prestigious Outstanding Young Person Award presented by the Japanese branch of the organisation Junior Chamber International. The Czech innovator was awarded for promoting the idea of ecologically friendly housing and for innovations in the field. Ruth Frankova asked him to explain his winning project in more detail.
We are still a fairly small project, even though we include tens of cooperating people or cooperating companies. We started as a small architecture competition for students, but throughout the years the competition grew and people started to be interested in what we do. Basically, we focus on houses that are at least partially self-sufficient in terms of energy or water treatment. And gradually the project grew, even though there was no plan, no master plan of being a big organization, but somehow it happened.
So what exactly is your aim?
Basically, the mission is still the same from the beginning. Our aim is to accelerate the transition to more sustainable technologies in our households. So all the activities that we do, they always have to check with this mission that we had in mind.
You said that you actually started as a competition for students in which you asked them to make their own project for an off-grid house. Will any of these winning projects be actually built into real houses?
Yes, actually, next week I'm changing my clothes from suits and ties to working suits, and we are going to build the first two off-grid houses that were actually proposed by the students from the first competition in 2016. So yes, there is a point of this story, and we are actually building these two houses as a showcase of technologies that can be already placed in mainstream construction.
What does it mean to you becoming the first Czech ever to receive the Outstanding Young Person Award?
Honestly, to me personally, the week spent in Japan, mostly I was missing my wife and my kids. So to me personally, it's not such a big deal. I understand it's an award that we receive as a team, which for me is more important. So me personally is not making a big deal out of it, but I think as a team we appreciate it.
And do you think that the award can actually have an impact on the future of your company?
I'm not thinking too much in terms of how could it help me personally, but I think it will definitely help people to hear our mission. So if the award helps us to accelerate the transition to sustainable technologies, then it made its point, and I would like that.
And can you just briefly tell us about your plans for the future?
Like I said, I think a man should build a house by himself at some point in his life. So I'm currently changing to being a construction worker on two real buildings that we are going to build in the upcoming years. And we also have a little startup for battery storage for households. So I will probably spend a lot of time on that because we have to travel around the world, try to find the right country to launch the product. So that's my plan for next 2 years, I think.
And that was startup founder Pavel Podruh speaking to our very own Ruth Frankova there. An in-depth survey commissioned by Czech Radio suggests that Czech society is divided into six social classes that differ in terms of resources and status. The study defines two types of upper middle class, the wealthy and emerging cosmopolitan, three types of lower middle class, and an impoverished class. Czech Radio found a typical representative of each social class, and Daniela Lazareva will now tell us a bit about Aleš Jeník, who is a member of the emerging cosmopolitan class.
The emerging cosmopolitan class is the country's future elite. Its members are young people born after the fall of communism who made the best of the opportunities that life in the free world presented. They work long hours, travel, speak foreign languages, have a high or above average income, and excel in the area of new competencies. Most work in IT or financing and, like Aleš Jeník, are constantly on the phone. Aleš is on his mobile phone and laptop all day long and often long into the night. He works as an IT specialist and heads his own small company and NGO. Originally, he studied pedagogics and history, but in view of the financial opportunities and opportunities for growth that opened up in the IT business, he turned his hobby into a successful career. He says it means being on call 24 hours a day.
At home, they say I work 24/7. Given the fact that some of our clients are in the United States, I often work in the evening or long into the night. During the day, I work from one of my favorite cafes. My closest work associates are in Germany and Great Britain, so it makes little difference where I am.
While most Czechs work 40 hours a day, Aleš works non-stop and says he has not had a holiday in 10 years. Having come close to burnout, he says he now feels the need to slow down a little.
My wife was threatening to divorce me if I didn't spend more time with her and the kids. And also, I was beginning to feel the effects of burnout, when the work is no longer a pleasure and when it starts piling up and getting out of hand. You know something is wrong then.
Aleš has three children, two boys and a girl, aged 6, 8 and 10. He says that any money that is saved will go towards financing their education and building a house that will be a nice home for the family in Prague. Although he says he has no plans to live abroad permanently, he and his wife want to spend some time abroad because of their children.
We are considering spending a year abroad, for instance in Germany, because of the children, so that they will improve their foreign language skills. And that was IT specialist Aleš Jeník, a member of the emerging cosmopolitan class, ending that report by Daniela Lazarová. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. Czechia has 12 cities, towns and other historic sites on the UNESCO World Heritage List. They are as diverse as the magnificent centre of Prague and rural cottages in the village of Holešovice in the south of Bohemia. Does inclusion on the prestigious list still help local authorities to keep them preserved? And aren't the growing crowds of tourists becoming more of a problem? Vít Bohanka looked for the answers, both in the Czech Republic and at UNESCO's headquarters in Paris.
The official promotional video for Český Krumlov shows beautiful high-resolution views of this fairy tale town in the south of Bohemia. It was officially included in the World Heritage List by UNESCO in 1992. According to its mayor, Dalibor Carda, this gave Český Krumlov the right positive impulse at the right time.
Yes, because it took pretty much all the strength of the town to represent the Czech Republic and also itself on the world stage. So the positive change after joining the UNESCO World Heritage Site has been incredible. There is absolutely no comparison between what the Český Krumlov town center looks like today and what it looked like some 30 years ago, or even before the Second World War. The town is in great shape and ready for tourists. It has really become one of the most significant tourist sites in Europe.
But even Mayor Carda admits that Český Krumlov is becoming a bit of a victim of its success. The small town has only about 13,000 inhabitants, but it needs services for a city several times its size. Indeed, there are so many visitors that the town hall had to put some restrictions on the number of large groups of visitors who typically come in buses from Prague or neighboring Austria.
My jsme zavedli systém evidence autobusů a jejich rezervací dopředu máme už na...
We implemented our electronic evidence system that monitors bus reservations in advance. Our Český Krumlov Development Fund, which tracks the reservations, has already some 3,500 reservations for tourist trips. All in all, it comes to about 170 buses per day and 3,500 people from them, plus individual visitors. While I was driving yesterday, I noticed that our biggest car park is already completely filled with cars. So, when you add everything up, our town grows significantly during the tourist season. We have about the same amount of waste as a city with 45,000 or 50,000 people.
The mayor of Český Krumlov, Dalibor Carda. I'm now some 200 kilometers away from Český Krumlov in front of the pilgrimage church of St. John of Nepomuk, another Czech World Heritage Site. On a typical summer weekend, it is also very busy. The mayor of the nearby town of Žďár nad Sázavou is Martin Mrkos.
Město ožívá, utrácejí se v něm peníze, Má to nějaký sociální ekonomický efekt obecně.
The city is getting livelier. People spend money and generally there is a positive social and economic impact. Of course, there is a negative side, which shows itself when too many tourists arrive to visit and the capacity and infrastructure of the town is simply not enough to handle the flow.
Co to ekonomicky městu přináší? Není to nakonec ale přece jenom...
But what does that realistically mean for the town's economy? Is it not the case that the tourists only show up, look at the church and then leave again without spending money in local businesses?
Zdejší podniky?
Tak obecně jde se na to takhle dívat a do jisté míry s vámi souhlasím.
Well, you can look at it that way and to a certain extent I agree with you. Tourists who come here to see the UNESCO site don't really spend 2 or 3 days here. Nonetheless, it is assumed that tourists at least go to the cafes, ice cream shops and so on, and that they buy souvenirs. So there is at least a minimal economic benefit.
Teda u památek, kde přijíždí a zároveň i ten den odjíždí.
Martin Mrkos, mayor of Žďár nad Sázavou. The Czech capital Prague, or more precisely, its historic center, has been on the UNESCO World Heritage List since 1992. Jan Kassel was the city's mayor in the 1990s and early 2000s. Now he is the president of the Czech Chamber of Architects, and this puts him in a unique position to explain the pros and cons of the inclusion of a city in the World Heritage List.
Samozřejmě to, že jste na seznamu, tak jste možná pod nějakým drobnohledem, možná máte nějaké vnitřní zábrany.
Being on the list, of course, means that you are kind of under a microscope. You have some limits and you have a domestic legislature that should try to comply with the sort of action that UNESCO requires. But if that sort of thing is not embedded in you or your society, it is not shared by the individuals, then an organization cannot make it happen. If you can impose sanctions, which is perhaps a needed course of action, especially for Czech society, but that is all you can do.
In other words, it is up to local authorities and people who live in such places to take care of their own heritage. UNESCO only recognizes their significance. It doesn't provide the financial and other resources for the upkeep of these sites. And in some cases, the advice of UNESCO experts can be counterproductive, says architect Jan Kassel.
Jsou to omezení, někdy jsou to až jako zbytečné restrikce, když do Prahy přijede.
Sometimes there are unnecessary restrictions. For example, a group of observers came to Prague and stopped construction on several high-rises in Pankrác, which were planned in the year 2000 by the American architect Richard Meyer to be the highest buildings in Prague. These buildings do not, at least in my view, decrease the historical value of the historic center of Prague. Pankrác is not a part of it. These buildings would not have any aesthetic or physical impact on the center. But because of the experts' opinions, the whole project was, unfortunately, greatly reduced, and to this day some parts of it are still left unfinished.
Jan Kassel, former mayor of Prague, now the president of the Czech Chamber of Architects. Let's take a step back. UNESCO included the first 3 Czech sites in the World Heritage List in the early 1990s. There were at that time only about 300 sites on the list worldwide. Now, in 2019, there are nearly 1100 of them, and the number keeps growing. Isn't there a risk that the prestige of UNESCO status will diminish? That's a question I put to Mechtil Tressler, who is director of the World Heritage Center at UNESCO headquarters in Paris.
Absolutely. We had this discussion over the past years. Maybe you have read my book, which is a book on the history of the World Heritage Convention, where we analyzed and made interviews of 1 hour with about 50 of the founding fathers and mothers of the convention. And some of them said we thought the World Heritage List would stop at 100. Some of the others said the diversity, both the biological, natural diversity and the cultural diversity, is infinitive on this earth. So it's normal that the World Heritage List also evolves. So there is a great variety of opinions, including with those who have created this convention. We did an interview, including with Russell Train, etc., who was already there at the White House conference. So one cannot say it clearly, but what is most important is that only those sites which are of outstanding universal value should be brought forward and inscribed on the World Heritage List. And what we see is, unfortunately, a politicization with a race by certain countries to get more sites. This is really a very worrying evolution.
As mentioned, Czechia has 12 World Heritage Sites. Italy has 54 of them. At the same time, India, which is many times more populous and has a very rich history as well, has only 37 sites. Should the World Heritage List perhaps be more geographically balanced?
Very much so. They have adopted in 1994 the so-called global strategy, where they said that the list should be a list which is more balanced in terms of geographical distribution, but also in terms of type of heritage. But one thing I need to make clear: outstanding universal value is not equally distributed throughout geographical coverage on Earth. This is absolutely clear. Outstanding universal value is related to very specific places, the most outstanding places on Earth, the most exceptional places on Earth. You need to make an argument why a site should go on the World Heritage List and has this outstanding universal value, and that should not be a political agenda of a mayor of a village to get re-elected. Certainly not.
Whether or not a historic or natural site is included in the World Heritage List is not decided by some UNESCO bureaucrats, but by the World Heritage Committee. It meets annually and consists of representatives sent by the governments of the member states. Mechtild Dressler says that political considerations have unfortunately played a role in the decision process.
It has increased in some of the decision-making of the World Heritage Committee. We have, for the first time last year, seen two sites going on the World Heritage List where the scientific bodies, that means our advisory bodies, which were created by UNESCO, namely ICOMOS and IUCN, couldn't find actually any values, and the committee inscribed these sites nevertheless. So this actually should not happen. The basis of the committee discussion should be a scientific evaluation which clearly states the reason why a site should go on the World Heritage List. And in the past, the committee had many discussions, but then when a site was not ready, or when the statement, a potential statement of OUV was not very clear, when the management was not there, when the protection was not there, they just deferred the site and waited that a better file would come back. Now, for a number of reasons, unfortunately, this step is by some countries not taken, and by the committee not taken. So we see, unfortunately, an increase in politics, which we at UNESCO don't want to see, because we need to protect the most outstanding places on Earth. And the convention is not about listing. The convention is about, and it's called actually the Convention Concerning the Protection of the Natural and the Cultural Heritage. You understand? So it's not about everything. It's about the protection of those most outstanding places. And that's where UNESCO has also to intervene.
Mechtild Dressler, director of the World Heritage Center of UNESCO in Paris. The 12 Czech sites included in the list are not in any way controversial. Nevertheless, after nearly three decades of membership in this elite club, Czech local authorities are starting to better understand that UNESCO status means not just privileges, but also responsibilities. Vít Pohanka, Radio Prague.
That feature was first broadcast on August 3rd this year. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. As always, we'll be glad to hear from you. But that is all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.